Right now, it's time for our weekly state news roundup. We're checking in with reporters from around the state about the stories they've been covering. First, city officials in Wisconsin Rapids advanced a proposed ordinance this week that would allow parents to be held accountable when their children are involved in some cases of bullying. Jamie Rokas is the community engagement editor at the Wisconsin Rapids Tribune and the Marshfield News Herald. Jamie, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Well, if this were put into practice, what exactly would this ordinance do?
Well, the ordinance has a couple of steps. One is it prohibits bullying or harassment, and it also prohibits retaliation against people who report bullying and harassment. But the part that has raised the most questions and the most concern among people in the city is that there's also a penalty for parents of minors who are involved in bullying situations. And that penalty for a first offense would be $50, and with additional court costs and fees, that total comes to $313.
And I understand, Jamie, this was motivated in large part by one particular incident. Can you talk about that?
I can. Earlier this year, it was in the middle of February, there was a social media post that included notes that had been written to a seventh grade girl at Wisconsin Rapids Area Middle School. And the content of these notes was very alarming to parents. The handwritten notes were given to her at school by students she didn't know who they were. And they called her names, told her she was stupid, and told her to end her life and how to do that. So parents were very alarmed, and so was the school, after those notes were made public.
And I understand this would not be the first type of ordinance like this. There are other communities in the state that have done this?
There are. Clover, Wisconsin started adopted a similar ordinance about 4 years ago, and they say it's been very successful. Grand Rapids, which is just adjacent to Wisconsin Rapids, approved a similar ordinance in early April. And there's other ones around the state in Monona as well as Shawano.
Do we know in those communities if they've assessed a lot of fines or if the idea is just to say, hey, parents, wake up, you could be held accountable?
Well, that's what's really interesting. In Clover, they said they actually have not issued any fines. They have issued about a dozen written warnings to parents, which is kind of the first step in most cases. And that's what Wisconsin Rapids and their police department is hoping to do as well, to kind of use this as a tool to make parents aware that their students are involved in a bullying situation. And they actually hope, in most cases, to never have to issue that fine to parents, you know, to resolve that situation first.
And as we wrap up, Jamie, what is the timeline for when we'll find out if this will go into effect in Wisconsin Rapids?
The next meeting of the full Common Council will be on June 18th, and it will be brought up again there.
Jamie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Jamie Rokas, Community Engagement Editor at the Wisconsin Rapids Tribune. She talked with us about a proposed ordinance in the city that could hold parents accountable if their children are involved in bullying. Now, the Unified School District of Antigo is closing three of its elementary schools, Pleasant View, Spring Valley, and Crestwood, joining other districts around the state in consolidating their facilities. Rob Mentzer is WPR's rural community reporter. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
Well, tell us the story about why the school district is deciding to close these three schools.
So this is, as you say, this is a familiar story, right? This is a district, the Unified School District of Antigo, has had declining enrollment from a peak of more than 3,000 kids in the mid-90s to this year, 2,300 or so. And when you have declining enrollments, you have fiscal challenges. And so, like a lot of districts, is looking for ways to consolidate and save money on buildings. And as a result, these three rural schools that are outside of like Antigo city limits were the ones that were chosen to be closed.
You, Rob, talked with some of the fourth graders yesterday at Pleasant View Elementary about their favorite memories there. You shared with us a listen to what some of them had to say.
One of my favorite memories was racing my friends through the deep snow this winter.
When we were doing hovercraft, playing football with my friends every day.
When we got to launch straw rockets in the gym.
When I was on the girls' basketball team.
So how were the kids feeling about the idea of their school closing down, Rob?
So, you know, for these fourth graders, I think that the prospect of summer looms rather large, and it may not sink into them. But, you know, I talked to a parent who herself went to the Spring Valley School. Her father and her uncle went to the same school, and her three kids went there. And I think, you know, people have an emotional relationship to these places. And so people sort of understand. Look, I think this source certainly did, and other sources I spoke to certainly understand the reason behind this. And yet, you know, there's a lot that gets imbued in an elementary school building. And, you know, you grow up there, kids grow up there and learn. And there's something sad about being there on the last couple days of school here.
Can you talk about other schools, especially in smaller towns or rural areas, that have made or are making similar decisions?
Yeah. So I have been trying to track down some sort of some quantities on this, and it's a bit hard to do. What do you define as a rural school? And there are a lot of, you know, the Oshkosh School District just this week voted to close a school district, and close an elementary school. It's within city limits. It's just a really old building, and so it closes. I looked at, you know, here nearby to Antigo, Merrill had closed, Pine River Elementary and another rural school. Wisconsin Rapids last year closed their Vesper Elementary School. And this is a sign of the times. This is just the way it is, I guess, as populations decline in a lot of these areas. There was a high profile piece in the New York Times about a year ago profiling the closure of the only school in the town of Arena, Wisconsin, that really looked at some of the larger forces behind it and also some of the emotions that the communities experience.
And we're at state budget time, of course. The school budget looms large in there. Do you see that as something that might help schools avoid future closures, or is this just a demographic trend that there's not really a budget fix for?
Well, there is budget matters. And you know, Antigo is like a lot of school districts in the state that have gone to referendum in recent years. Voters in 2016 voted against a referendum that involved the closure of schools as well as some other new renovations of other sites. Someone that I talked to said she thought maybe one reason people voted against was they thought, well, if we vote against this, maybe they won't close the schools, and it doesn't really work that way. But like, without a doubt, this is driven by schools that look at their balance sheets and try to figure out how to, you know, where they can save money, and more money from the state certainly would be a factor. It may not completely overrule the demographic trends, but certainly it would be a factor.
Rob, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's Rob Mentzer, WPR's Rural Communities reporter. He filled us in on the Antigo School District's decision to close three of its elementary schools. Finally, Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley is planning to demolish one of his three residences, a mansion in Shorewood that he purchased last December. The move is getting pushback from local residents who say the mansion has historic significance. Dan Bice is the watchdog columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Can you talk, Dan, about the reaction that Abley's decision is getting from his new neighbors?
Well, the village of Shorewood says that the opposition to his plans running about 90% to 10%. People just are very upset that he wouldn't have disclosed this before now. He put in an application to demolish the house. He bought the house in December of last year, and now he's planning to do this and to put up his own house on this property. We should stipulate this is like a first world problem. Mm-hmm. This isn't a major issue or problem, but it is true that the people in Shorewood are very upset about this.
Now, this building, I think you wrote it, dates back to the 1920s. People use the adjective historic, but in a legal sense, it does not have historic protections, right?
Right. There's a famous architect here, Alexander Eschweiler, who designed it. It's a very interesting design. It's built around an organ of one of the E-lines had the house and had him build the house. There's an organ in there with pipes in the ceiling and in the basement. 1927. It is from the outside. It looks like a lovely house. And everyone seems to agree, you know, he's bought the property. There are no protections. So he has the right to do with it as he pleases. But the people of Shorewood are asking the question, is what he wants to do right for the community?
So what kind of things are people in the area, given that they have no real recourse here, what kind of things are they doing to try to protest this, I guess?
Well, there's an online petition opposing this. Many of them showed up at the last village board meeting for Shorewood. This is a very popular topic on social media. But I wrote a piece today saying it looks like he's going to be able to get to do what he wants, because Shorewood has no laws or ordinances about historic preservation. So the best they could do is to send him a letter to tell him not to do what he's planning to do. And they even voted that down 4-3 earlier this week. So, there's pushback, but it doesn't look like there's any legal recourse to stop him from what he's planning to do. The biggest question politically is, why does he do this now? He's up for re-election in April. As you said, starting off this whole discussion, he's got two other places to live here. He has actually the largest house in Milwaukee, which sits vacant at 3319 North Lake Drive. And he lives in the Modern condo, which is he's bought several of the condos, torn out the walls, very large place. But he's decided to move ahead with this now. He doesn't have any opposition, but there are a lot of people online saying, I'll never vote for him again as a result of this controversy.
And in the meantime, people can maybe get a piece of this house. It's already being stripped and things are going to Habitat for Humanity's Restore. Is that right?
That's right. They have three restores, and all of this stuff is going to the Wauwatosa Restore. They've taken out windows. They've taken out doors. They've taken out a lot of stuff, and all you have to do is go to the Restore in Tosa, and you can buy any of that stuff.
I don't want to make light of it, but does anybody have dibs on the organ yet?
I don't think it's been removed because of the way it's set up, but... again, I'm no organ specialist. The former owners of the house say this is a very important and special organ. It's currently not working, though, because of it was flooded and so forth. But if you want to buy it, you're going to have to fix it.
Dan, thanks a lot for getting us up to speed on this.
Sure. Thank you very much.
That's Dan Bice, watchdog columnist from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We talked about a controversial decision by Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley to demolish one of his homes in Shorewood, as we heard, raising some concerns among his neighbors and members of that community. He finishes up our weekly roundup of news stories around Wisconsin with the people who are covering them.